The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Connect with ultra-fast speeds and our best ever Wi-Fi all around your home.
Let me go to beautiful Roundstone in Connemara in glorious Galway. Ciara King, good morning.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
I'm very happy to see you, but to talk to you this morning. I don't know what class of view you have from where you are, but can you give me a sense of the place this morning? Make me envious and jealous.
It is very Paul Henry-esque. Oh. There's so many greys in the sky. And there's some dying winter greens on the trees, but there's also gorgeous lights up all along the pier because there's a music show been filmed in the village this week, believe it or believe it not.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll get there soon, I hope.
And can I just say before we start,
yes.
I want to apologise because I feel I've learned an awful lot about myself in the last 3 months and I feel like I've been trolling you and I haven't been that nice to you.
Yeah.
And then you've been very kindly have me on your show. So I want to say that I'm actually sorry about sending you all those gorgeous photos of the landscape of Connemara.
You, on occasion, these pictures come through and I think the vomit emoji has been used quite a lot by way of how sick I am at and how much I miss the place. So
and
thank
you. I don't even know why I was doing it.
Cruelty,
I
say.
I think
cruelty.
It was cruelty. And then it was someone that was like, "Ciara, that's actually really mean you
yeah.
were in Dublin for a majority of the pandemic, you know how it felt to be away from Connemara, so I want to apologise." So
I should have sent you back pictures of the Super Value car park and said, "This is what I'm looking at." You know, this is the cruelty, this is a bad trade off.
You never would have won, but anyway.
I wouldn't have. I'm sure it's impossible to compete. Now, for people who don't listen to 2FM, could you explain who you are and what you do there?
So my name is Ciara King and I'm a broadcaster on 2FM on a weekend show with Chris Green. So it's Chris and Ciara. We're on every Saturday and Sunday from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock. And we've been doing the radio rounds now for about 11 years.
Yes.
You might know us from my radio as well. And then we came to 2FM about 6 or 7 years now.
And
oh my
congratulations
God.
On the recent figures where you got an enormous bounce. Well done.
We did indeed. And look, that's down to the listeners as well and
sure.
the pandemic and, you know, people looking for alternative ways to kind of get through the last couple of months. So, yeah, and it was brilliant.
The sound quality is amazing here in the sense that you could be sitting across from me, but you're in an apartment, is that right?
No, I'm actually in my childhood bedroom.
Oh, sorry, you're
Roundstone.
Broadcasting from your family home. I forgot that.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I am. Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And you've been doing that since...
I've been doing that since around the end of July, August. And I kind of made the decision then. I was like, right, okay, 4 hours radio a week. What am I going to do here? Am mm-hmm. I going to stay in Dublin during a pandemic living with 3 other people? Or can I take this opportunity to go home, start from the source again and just take a little bit of a break? The pandemic was, and I feel for people in Dublin City that are living in rented accommodation because
yeah.
it's pretty tough. It really, really is tough. And I was lucky. You know what I mean? I was lucky that RTÉ allowed me to come down here. I stole a Thailand box that I'm never giving back. And it just kind of worked. It worked out for me that way. And a place came up and I've never lived on my own. I've never had my own place. So this was kind of the perfect opportunity to do it. You know, I do realize how lucky I am, by the way.
I know. I know that. And you're unpleasant with it. Tell me about Children in Hospital Ireland and what they do and why we're, well, we will talk about why we're talking about that in a second, but tell me about them.
Well, children, when I first started in RTÉ, I wanted to kind of use my voice I wanted to loan my voice to a cause that I believed in and that meant something to me. So children, I reached out to a couple of people and Children in Hospital Ireland got back to me. And this is when I'd just come to RTÉ about 6 or 7 years ago. So I must have really liked them because I ended up doing a mini marathon for them.
Mm.
And I haven't done one since. they brought me out to Crumlin Hospital or Talla Hospital mm-hmm. and they brought me into the playroom. And what they do is they're one of these organisations that they provide services, play services for children in hospitals. And they also provide valuable time for parents who are in with the children to grab a cup of tea, to grab a cup of coffee. They've got books, they've got toys. It's a really, they do arts and crafts. They're in a couple of hospitals all over the country. And as anyone who has been in that situation, who has had sick children, who is a parent of a sick child, it's always nice to have a little haven in a hospital environment. And Children in Hospital, I met some of the volunteers as well. Oh my God, they're just salt of the earth people. They're so loving. And it's a charity that I'm very, very proud to have my name attached to.
It's a lovely thing. And they have the Cup of Kindness.
It's National Children's Day tomorrow. So they're doing the Cup of Kindness. So they're basically looking for the price of a cup of coffee or a cookie, which is about €5. And they have various places where you can go on and donate that. So if you can give, I know that, you know, so many people have been so good this year giving to different charities. You were just talking about St. Vincent de Paul there. Mm-hmm. And I know that not a lot of people have a lot this year, but if you can, if you have any coins at all, justgiving.com/campaign/cup of kindness and or else check out childrenhospital.ie.
I'm going to bring you somewhere difficult and you can stop me if it's getting too difficult. All right, Ciara? So
okay.
We'll tread carefully, but we'll go there together. And in some ways, I want to go to you watching the TV one Friday night not too many weeks ago when you saw the great Rob Kearney, Irish rugby player, mm-hmm. chatting away, and you thought, here we go, it'll be another interview about great success, about the Six Nations and the, you know, and all his wonderful achievements. I don't say that lightly, but
no,
but his conversation moved, went somewhere completely unexpected.
It did, and I was sitting on my own, and I was having a cup of tea, and I was watching the Late Late Show, and Rob Kearney came on, and obviously I know his autobiography is coming out. I'm a huge fan of Rob Kearney. Mm-hmm. I'm a massive fan of the Irish rugby team. I'm going to have to say Connacht and Munster here before
obviously.
My mother and father kill me.
Yes.
And then. I remember you talking to me, you said, you know, do you want to talk about this? And he talked about his brother who had passed away. And I was sitting on the couch and I was like, God, I didn't know that about Rob Kearney. And then he said that he didn't remember him. And I got really excited, and not for the normal reasons for seeing Rob Kearney on the TV. It was because Rob Kearney had, I had identified with Rob Kearney on the level that I hadn't identified with anyone else. I also had a brother who passed away that I don't remember. So for me, I actually texted a friend of Rob's, and this manic text message, been like, oh my God, would you please tell Rob that I said thank you so much, and I have never seen myself represented on the television before. In Rob Kearney. I know that sounds really weird.
Well, it does. And just to remind people, so Rob's older brother, Ross, was killed by a lorry in mm-hmm. a desperate accident when Rob was, I think he was 6 years old at that time. Or no, the brother, Ross was 6 years old at the time, as far as I remember. I'm a bit hazy on the detail, but it was something that he was very articulate talking about the pain of that and then trying to remember the detail of that and trying to keep that, his brother Ross, alive in his heart, if you like. And that got you thinking about your brother Dara.
It did, because as I said, I've been a patron for Children's Hospital Ireland for the last 6 years, but I've never really talked about the fact of why I do this. And it is in memory of my brother Dara, but also I don't think I'd be doing the charity. I don't think I'd be giving my best to the charity if I didn't share this story. And I was always going to share the story. I just didn't know when I was going to share the story. You know, myself and Chris, when we first started radio together, we made a pact that we'd never talk about anything private on air.
Okay.
And the two of us have kept that pact and that trust and that respect, which is great. And I can't explain it. Maybe it's the year that was. Maybe it's that this is bigger than me. And maybe it's that the charities really need our help this year. That's why I've come on to talk about my brother Dara.
Well, let's talk about Dara then, and as much as you can. Tell me everything you can tell me about him.
Well, he was born in England, and he was 6 years older than me, and he developed leukemia when he was around five and a half, six mm-hmm. years of age. So then mum and dad had moved back to Connemara at that stage, because I was born in Ireland. And mum and dad said he was home within a week, and he had a really broad Connemara accent. And this is from, you know, spending time in London in the late 70s, hanging out with, you know, multi-ethnicities, you know, across London City. And mum and dad had that life in the late 70s, very much based on Tottenham Court Road. So there's this image that I have of my brother who was born in England, and then this image of him coming home and having a Connemara accent and getting into fishing within a week, like. Mm. And then, of course, obviously developing, it was acute lymphatic leukemia.
Okay.
So then a lot of that was, he was obviously in and out of hospital. It didn't really last that long, you know, the whole process of him getting diagnosed to him actually passing away. So he spent, you know, some time in the regional hospital in Galway, Temple Street in Dublin, but he ended up in the Royal Marsden in the UK. Because that's the only hospital that would take him, actually.
Because of the time.
Yeah, seemingly it was very hard. It was very hard to get, if you were a child with cancer, to get into hospitals in England and Scotland and Ireland at the time. But the Royal Marsden took him in.
I can see why this story chimed, because like with Rob Kearney, Rob was two and a half. His brother was six. His brother Ross was six. Your Dara was seven. You were how old at that time?
I was two and a half.
Two and a half. He came to your cot when you were born.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what happened.
I think this was a couple of, mum had put me down to sleep, I think, and she had obviously gone up to wake me at some stage. And when she walked into the room, Dara had changed my nappy and he was feeding me, and he was like, she's fine, mum, I got her. You know, he was that kind of kid. And mum was telling me a funny story last night, actually, because mum said that I was a holy terror in the hospital. I was 2 and a half.
Yeah, I believe that.
You know,
that,
she said the doctors and the nurses still talk about me, but she told me genuinely, Ryan, like seriously, okay, all these years later, and I'm like, I think I'm a lovely person. But no, he used to have this drip feed thing, and mum was telling me about it last night, and he used to put me up on the drip feed. It was like a long pole, and it searched into his arm, and he used to race up and down the hospital ward. And that was something that I hadn't heard until last night, and I just thought, that's really funny.
And he was allowed to pick a name for you, which I think is, history could have been so different.
It could have been. That was my baby brother, because I double checked. He was a massive fan of the A-Team. And when my little brother Patrick was born, Patrick was 6 months.
Patrick had done that.
Yeah, he wanted to call Patrick either Mr. T, Hannibal, or Murdoch. And he wasn't taking no for an answer, but my father, you know, pushed through for Patrick. So there you go. Could have been very different.
I think Hannibal cool King has a very good ring to it.
I'd love to have a younger brother called Mr. T. How awesome would that be?
Okay. With regard to Dara, he was 7 years old when he died. And I can't, you know, it's the great aberration for any parent, let alone sibling, to have to say goodbye to somebody so young and so beautiful. And your parents are obviously happy to talk about him now. And I wanted to say thank you to them for allowing you to come on and talk about your brother this morning. How has Dara's presence been felt in your life?
Oh, God.
'Cause you don't remember him.
No, I don't. So if I go right back, I'm sitting in my childhood bedroom right now, you know, my single bed is still here. And I used to lie in bed at night as a little girl, and I used to will myself to have a memory. I used to be like, no, Kira, you definitely do. And then I think I got to my teenage years and I read an article about repression, and I was like, I've repressed my memories. So they're there. And you know what I mean? And then I got to my 20s and I was like, man, I don't remember him. So there's things that I have done in my life to make sure that he is very much alive for me, if that makes sense.
Like what?
And I have to say, credit to my mum and dad,
sure,
because we talk about him all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And I have to say, my mum's family and my dad's family, my cousins, the people of the village, they have kept his memory alive for me. And they've allowed me to like create this little tapestry of what I think his life was while he was here with us. Do you know that sort of way? The London life and the Roundstone life. And I love that people share stories, and I really appreciate it. And when you're least expecting it, someone will share a story with you.
It's amazing, you know? Yeah. When something I've learned from sitting in this chair is that people who've suffered a bereavement love to talk about the person they've lost. People who approach people who've suffered a bereavement don't know where to look.
Yeah, yeah.
And the truth is that the bereaved would love if that person who was awkward said, do you know what I loved about Dara? And you go, no, tell me everything, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a strange one.
It is, because I've kind of felt a kind of guilt, you know, when I was younger. You know, people say to me, oh, do you have any brothers and sisters? And I'd always say, yes, I have a younger brother called Patrick and I have an older brother called Dara, but he died. And then people would just get really, really awkward. But then on the flip side of that, when I got asked if I have any siblings, I'm like, yeah, no, I've got a little brother called Patrick. And then in my head, I was like, say Dara. So it's this weird guilt.
I wonder why you were so desperate to find a memory in the bank. To what effect, I wonder? What was it, just a natural desire to remember somebody you should be thinking of?
Well, he was my older brother.
Yeah,
100%. And, you know, I've had friends who've lost their siblings at later, you know, times in their life, and they've come up to me and they're like, here, you get it. And I'm like, I do, but I really don't. And I often wonder, would I have been better off remembering him or not remembering him?
You know the answer to that now, of course.
Yeah, I know.
You know the answer to that now. But it's true. It is true.
Yeah.
But it's a fair dilemma. You know,
it's natural,
I think, to think that way. Tell me why Barry McGuigan was important in your family in the 80s.
Oh, God. So Barry McGuigan is a superstar in our house. So Barry, he was fighting for, was it the featherweight championship? Dara was a massive fan. Like, he had Barry McGuigan jumpers and t-shirts and somebody got in contact with Barry McGuigan's dad through some dance scene and got onto Barry to record Dara a tape when Dara was sick. And Barry very graciously recorded this gorgeous tape to Dara, you know, telling him to keep on fighting. And that if he was ever up our way, that Dara was to pop in to make sure. So then Dara wrote him a letter being like, well, if you're ever down around Stone, you know, you can always pop in to me, my sister, Kira, and my brother, Patrick. And oh, we absolutely loved Barry McGuigan. And the night that Barry won that huge title, Dara was actually really, really sick. But he came, but he was over in London at the time. I think he was in Mum's sister's house. And he got phone calls from Ireland when Barry McGuigan won, you know. And the next day he went back to the hospital and they all lined the ward and they clapped. Yeah.
That's a sweet thing.
Yeah. And it's even weirder. My cousin Shane was back for a rugby match a couple of years back. And as we do when cousins get together, they always bring up Dara. And I really have to thank them for that. And we were chatting about Barry McGuigan and what Barry McGuigan did. And he said, you know, Kira, you should email him. And I was like, yeah, you know, I've often thought about it, whatever. And then a couple of days later, I was still doing nights on 2FM and I was kind of ferreting around the desk like an urban raccoon, probably trying to steal pens or something. And this piece of paper fell off a desk and I just picked it up and it had Barry McGuigan and his phone number written on it. And I was like, oh my God, if this isn't a sign. But I wasn't going to ring Barry McGuigan and be like, hello, do I have a story for you? So I got onto a really good friend of mine who works in sport and he sent me Barry McGuigan's email. And I decided on the 28th of February, which is the day that my brother passed away, to send Barry McGuigan an email and just tell him what he did for our family and how we feel about him and all the rest. And I realised that the 28th of February is not only the day that Dara passed away, but it's also Barry McGuigan's birthday.
Oh, Lordy.
Yeah. So I didn't get an answer for a while. And I didn't even mind whether I got an answer or not. I just wanted to say what he had done for our family, you know. And he emailed back. It had gone into a spam account, which I was really annoyed about because I used my RTE address and everything to make sure that he'd see it. But he emailed back a couple of weeks later and he wrote me the most beautiful email. And he said that he'd keep Dara in his thoughts, you know, on his birthday. And then obviously, was it last year, his beautiful daughter passed away. Oh, and, no. You know, I know this is going to sound strange, but we felt it in our house.
I believe that.
You know,
I believe that.
We did.
God, what a desperate story for Barry as well. And just so awful. But I can understand why you felt it and why your folks particularly felt it, because he was part of this story in many ways.
Yeah.
What do you think, Kira, how do you think that Dara's premature departure from the world affected you in your 20s and beyond?
It's definitely, you know, a couple of years back, I was going through a significant breakup. I wasn't dealing with it as I should have been dealing with it, as in I wasn't getting better and I was actually completely losing my mind. And I was like, wait a second, there's something deeper going on here. And obviously, I'd never felt this way in my life before. So I went to therapy for it. And through process of elimination, you know, the lady therapist said to me, she said, you have to grieve for your brother. And it took me about 30 years to realize that I had to grieve for my brother, because for me, it was my mum and dad's grief. It was, you know, my family's grief. Imagine, it took me 30 years to realize that I had to grieve for my brother. So that in itself, and then, you know what, that just opened a whole, you know, can of worms. And it's the best thing that I ever did. And it turns out that the reason that breakup affected me so desperately was because, you know, there was abandonment issues there. And I remember being like, what? I do not have abandonment. Tony Soprano has abandonment issues. I don't have abandonment issues. But it, of course, it makes sense. And I think that we'd all be really foolish to think that certain things that happened in our childhood aren't going to manifest in some way in our adulthood, no matter what that situation was. And that just happened to be mine, you know. And I think you go two ways with that as well.
Yeah, go on.
And you know, you learn that, and I've learned so much, and it's the best thing that I've ever done. And Dara sits comfortably on my shoulder now, if that makes sense.
It does.
And but for me, it's been a It's one of the best things I've ever done, because I've discovered that I know why I am the way I am. I know why I have done all these things. I know the reason that I wasn't supposed to be the firstborn. I was supposed to be the awkward middle child. And then I got propelled into, well, I gave myself an awful lot of responsibility that I took on, which was the narrative that I fed myself, not my parents, not anybody else. It was me. And I've just realized how hard I've been on myself for about 30 years. But yeah, so it's been interesting. And I think you can go two ways when something like that happens. You can cling on to a relationship and you can put your claws in, or you can go, do you know what? I'm just going to withdraw because I can't deal with that. And I think that's probably what I've done for the last couple of years. And that is all connected to my childhood. But again, it's a learning process. And I'm at least at this stage.
It's remarkable, you know? Isn't it? How the passage of time. Ryan and Kira, Suzanne, I'm listening to both of you, and I'm reminded of the Seamus Heaney poem Midterm Break. I'm sure you're well familiar with it, which tells the story of his 4-year-old brother who was killed by a car. Seamus was 14 at the time. It's extraordinary how conversations like this bring people into the fold. Alison says, my brother died of leukemia when he was 5, I was 11. I should have loads of memories, but my memories start when he was diagnosed and all his sickness over the following year. I remember the funeral vividly, even small details, but absolutely nothing about the years when he was well. 30 years later, I still feel so sad about this. You were concerned about coming on to talk about something so personal. But when you hear responses like that, it must allow you the freedom to understand how important it is to talk.
Yeah, and look, I'm a bit of a cynic because I work in the media myself. And, you know, there's been times where I'm like, oh, could everyone just stop sharing their stories, you know? And now, you know, after, you know, a couple of years, I see the benefit. I see the benefit my certain friends get when they read something that resonates with them. And I know how I felt when Rob Kearney said that on the television that night. And I know that might sound strange to so many people. But to me, it was a revelation. Like, it was just, I couldn't believe it. You know, I wanted to do crazy things. I wanted to, like, I text my friend and I was like, would it be weird if I rang him? Would it be, you know, just to, and then it was like, okay, I need to relax. Because sometimes I can be a little bit when it comes to, you know, when it comes to people share. Because I think that all human beings are just looking to be understood. And, you know, when you've been through something so specific, let's say, you really want to connect on a level where someone can kind of get it, you know?
Yeah, of course. Anyway. No, it makes perfect sense. And sometimes there are clubs no one wants to be members of.
Yeah.
But you do need to meet fellow members to stay sane. Mm. Kira, it's been good to talk to you this morning.
Thank you.
How are you feeling?
So much.
Are you okay?
I'm good. I didn't get a wink of sleep.
No, I'm not surprised. No, I know you were this wasn't an easy thing for you or your family to do, but I think I can see from the text it's already made a difference to a lot of people this morning. So thank you for that. I mean,
look, thank you, and thank your team. You know I love you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Likewise, Len. Get yourself a cup of something and go for a lovely walk along where Dog's Bay maybe, and don't send me a picture, and I wish you I'll catch up with you in due course, but mind yourself, Kira. Thank you to you and your family. See you soon.
Thanks, Ryan. Bye.
Thank you. Kira King joining us from her childhood bedroom in Roundstone in Connemara this morning. And you know, tomorrow, as she was saying, marks World Children's Day, and what an important day in this crazy time. It's the annual fundraising day, the Cup of Kindness for Children in Hospital Ireland, and people can donate the price of a cup of tea and a biscuit to justgiving.com. And you can also go to childreninhospital.ie for details on information and how to donate. But like I said to Kira a second ago, it's an enormous response to her conversation. And, you know, from people like Kate, who says, I worry about my daughter who has become the oldest due to her brother's accident and death. This is a lovely and heartbreaking conversation. Yeah, sometimes heartbreaking conversation is required. And that's why we're so grateful to Kira King for doing that for us this morning. Back shortly.